Now, a few interesting things. Well, they may be interesting to you. They may not be interesting to me, but who knows. Tonight, dinner at Frankston at La Porchetta's for all our listeners south of the Yarra and right down in the Mornington Peninsula. 6:30pm start. It's the Nepean Highway in Frankston, La Porchetta's. You can't miss it. Pay for your own food and drinks. Come and meet some interesting people, listeners to Community Radio 3CR. Open invitation. So hopefully we'll see some new people tonight. That's at 6:30pm. Don't be frightened. Remove yourself from your screens and come and meet some real people. Now, this Friday, two things are happening. If you're a regular listener to Community Radio 3CR and you can't go to sleep, the Talk Back with Attitude crew, which I'm part of, will be doing a May Day Mayhem Talk Back with Attitude from, I can't believe this, from 12:30 in the morning to 5 a.m. So 12:30 to 5 a.m., set the alarm on and give us a call. We're really interested on Talk Back with Attitude. We're talking to people who are regular listeners to 3CR because there's the 50th anniversary celebrations coming up on the 4th of July, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, on Friday, after the all-nighter, well, quarter of a nighter, I'll be doing a May Day walk through Melbourne beginning at 11 a.m. at Chummy Place in Carlton, which is the only lane, street, road, drive named after an Australian anarchist. So we'll be starting off at Chummy Place and it'll start at 11 a.m. Should finish by about 12:30. It's an interesting walk. We look at important historical sites and I'll be talking about why they're important to us as activists. You're all welcome to come along, and then we're going to have, those of you who wish, we'll be having a lunch at the Paramount Food Court, which is very near our last stop. It's about 22 metres away. That's the Her Majesty's Theatre. So what does anarchism have to do with Her Majesty's Theatre? Well, come along on May Day, this Friday, 11 a.m., beginning at Chummy Place. Now, so there's a few things happening. Now, I'd like to thank Philip for the opportunity to talk to people on Saturday about the anarchist and anti-fascist activity in the Italian community in between the two world wars. I'm hoping to have that presentation up on the YouTube channel, josephtoscano.com, which is a YouTube channel I set up to look at radical Australian history, not just forgotten, but ignored, brushed aside. And as I keep saying to people, the known cannot be unknown, but the unknown, you can draw whatever you like on it. And the fact is, for far too long, radical activity in this country has been pushed aside. The sacred cows agree with me. They've wandered in. We're about to fly off to the Community Radio.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. And if you think I'm a technical genius, without Henrietta, I would be nothing. Henrietta pushes all the buttons, puts us on air, makes sure that people across the country listen to us. Now, if you wonder what anarchy is all about, well, anarchism, it means without rulers. Anarchos, without rulers. It's amazing how things get confused. It's not without rules. That's what capitalism is about. It's about without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people, as we see every day? You know, some ruler decides that they want to bomb something and petrol prices go up and industries close down. Well, it's inequalities in power and wealth. That's exactly right. Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve or share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common. How boringly motherhood statements. Devolving power, holding wealth in common. What can you say? Well, obviously, that's why anarchists are the worst people on the planet. That's right, because they want to take away power from those who wield it, and they want to take away wealth from those who acquire it by exploiting other people's labour. What horrible, horrible people. Now, fear. Now, I assume most of you would have seen those little pictures of all those people cowering under the table and the Washington buffoon being whisked off the table. Fear. Fear and panic. That's what we saw. I mean, the friendly assassin, in inverted commas, created that fear and panic. And I was thinking to myself, here we have some of the most powerful people on planet Earth for a few seconds beginning to understand what it's like to be living in Gaza or Lebanon or the Ukraine or Iran or the Gulf States. To be living in your tent in Gaza, even having it bombed by some super aircraft, something you could never do anything about. Or living in Beirut, one of the major cities on the planet, and seeing buildings collapse and people die. Or the fear of finding yourself in the war in Sudan, or the fear of watching your children starve to death, or the fear of not knowing where you are going to sleep that night, or the fear of being raped or bashed because, you know, of your religion, because of your ideas, being imprisoned. So for 10 seconds, we saw the mighty, the powerful, experience that fear. Let's hope the fact that for the first time maybe in their lives that they find themselves in that situation, that they will, in the future, think about the damage and the fear and the chaos that is created when they decide to exercise the extraordinary powers they have available. So think about it. The thing is about, you can look at things in different ways. And those of you who have been following what's happened in the United States of America, USA, 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 you have to think to yourself, what is the greater evil? Now I'm going to make you a judge. That's right. I'm sure you've always wanted to be a judge. But what's the greater evil? Is the greater evil for the friendly assassin to try to assassinate some of these people? Or is the greater evil bombing Iran in the middle of negotiations, killing their leaders? Is the greater evil seeing the Israeli state totally fail its citizens on the 7th of October 2023, when supposedly the world's greatest security apparatus, the Israeli Mossad, had no inkling that the Palestinians in Gaza, or Hamas in Gaza, was going to try to break out? Is the greater evil the carnage that we see in Lebanon, where over a million people have been displaced, many permanently, because the Israeli state, able to use its mighty military apparatus, creates total mayhem and chaos in a country of less than 5 million people, Lebanon, in order to protect, it says, itself? Is the greater evil the number of civilians that have died in the last 2 months in the war in Lebanon, although it isn't a war? Is the greater evil what's happening in the Ukraine at the hands of the Russians? Or is the greater evil what happened in Washington a few days ago? You need to judge. I can't judge. All I'm doing is putting forward ideas about what is evil. Is it evil to cut billions of dollars of aid overnight, condemning people to death from preventable diseases because there's not enough assets? Is the greater evil to level Gaza, to destroy 85% of the buildings, to target journalists? So what is the greater evil, as they say? As they say, you need to sort that out in your own mind. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Four women and nine children. You would think that Australia has been invaded by China, wouldn't you? Four women, Australian citizens, and nine children. There's huge fuss, especially amongst the Dutton's right-hand man, the current leader of the flaying Liberal Party. Huge fuss. Can't we deal with the Australian Federal Police? A plethora of laws regarding terrorist activity. Can't we deal with the spectre of four women, partners of former ISIS fighters, most of them are now dead, and nine children who have no guilt, coming back to this country? What's the fuss? Why do we see the federal government running backwards and saying, we're not going to assist these people to come back? While we have the opposition and divided nation jumping up and down about the fact that four women and nine children want to come back to this country, as if we have no mechanisms via which to punish people, as if we have no mechanisms via which to protect the Australian public from these four women and nine children? Come on. We're bigger than that, aren't we? Well, sometime we're not. $15 billion. Now, I've been interested in the last year in following the CFMEU, the construction division of the CMFU been placed in administration. And I've been a little bit puzzled by the fact that we have this figure of $15 billion, corrupt dollars. Now, obviously, a few hundred members of the CMFU have been booted out. Interestingly, nobody's been charged with any criminal offence, but we'll see what happens in the future. But this figure is floated about. The CMFU has been involved in a $15 billion, not million, billion dollars corrupt racket. Now, I'm sure if it had been $15 billion distributed among a few hundred officials that have been outed, and I'm not saying that some of these officials are corrupt. The fact is that where does this figure come from? Well, the figure comes from the fact that some people think that the construction division of the CFMEU has cost the community $15 billion. Now, how do they come up with this figure? Well, it's very simple. Now, obviously, when a trade union or trade unions are involved in discussions with employers and governments regarding major projects, what happens is that agreements are made to ensure that these projects are not delayed through industrial action or through workplace action, and that workers put their shoulders to the wheel and ensure that the project finishes on time in budget. Now, these negotiations are commonplace, not just on construction sites, but they're in commonplace around the country. And if a trade union is able to extract some reward for its members, and let's not forget that the construction division of the CFMEU has over 100,000 members, because they work to ensure that a project meets deadlines without unnecessary interruptions. Is that corruption? Because that's where that $15 billion come from. It's not a fact that a few hundred officials have put the money in their pockets and now living the life of Riley with their corporate mates. No. This $15 billion figure is not about corruption. It's about ensuring that major projects, which require thousands of human beings to complete, are completed on time. That conditions are safe for the workers involved. And if you want to talk about that as corruption, well, then look at this country's taxation system. Look at the fact that people can legally minimise their tax. The more money they have, the more avenues they have to legally minimise their tax. Do we call that corruption? The fact that billions of dollars in possible taxation revenue are lost? No, we don't call that corruption. We call it smart business practices. And when we see this country's natural resources being exploited by private companies who basically pocket most of the profits while we hang around waiting for a few royalties and a bit of tax revenue to be brushed off the corporate table in the direction of the government, do we call that corruption? Of course not. And when we see billions of dollars, of taxpayers' dollars, going into the private sector to pay the wages of people in the aged care sector, do we call that corruption? But when we see robo-debt, which was basically an illegal, corrupt system, do we see anybody charged with any crime? Of course not. That's just government policy. It's not corruption, is it? So let's get our figures right. With a state election in Victoria in November, I think it's important to understand that this figure of $15 billion is going to be paraded over and over and over again. But the fact is, it's not corrupt. It's smart tactics by a union which is trying to improve the conditions, safety and wages of its members. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Cowards. I don't use that word often. Cowards. Now, I did notice a little bit of kerfuffle regarding Anzac Day ceremonies. Now, I remember about 20 years ago, there were protests at Anzac Day ceremonies by women who wanted to highlight the fact that war, in modern warfare, the greatest casualties, as we see in the Middle East today, are civilians. And as we see many parts of the world, that rape is used as a weapon via which to, a war weapon via which to dehumanise the so-called enemy. And what we saw, the reaction was just extraordinary. Police dragging women away from Anzac Day ceremonies. But that was 20 years ago. Now, we see some buffoons carry on regarding welcome to country ceremonies. Now, I'd just like to remind people what a welcome to country ceremony is. It's a simple concept. It's not welcome to Australia, all right? In Australia, there are over 250 separate Indigenous nations. And welcome to country is a welcome by somebody from that physical community who welcomes you to their piece of land. That's all it is. There's nothing radical about it. It's about acknowledging this country's reality. But we have people in our community, and I'm not talking about the idiots, you know, shouting a few slogans and then pissing off before there are, you know, somebody punches them in the head. The fact is, that's not about them. What I'm really fascinated about is the reaction. The reaction in the community. The reaction amongst our political leaders. The reaction from the defunct Liberal Party. The reaction from a National Party that's trying to rebadge itself as an agrarian socialist. The reaction from Divided Nation. And most importantly of all, the reaction from the Victorian opposition, which is going to go to the next state election at the end of November with a policy of tearing up a treaty which has been hammered out over a four-year period between the Victorian government and various Indigenous groups in this state, in the state of Victoria. Now, obviously, it's not a perfect treaty, but it's a treaty. But to see a major political party say they will tear up the treaty. Highlights the extent of opposition in this country to people acknowledging the reality of the colonisation, the reality and brutality of a colonisation process which continues to have devastating impacts on First Nations people. Could you imagine? You're sitting in a conference room, you welcome the delegates to the conference, and people get up at the back and say boo, 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 because you're welcoming them to the conference. It's the same concept. It's a total insult. But the greater insult is that the Wilson-led Liberal Party opposition in Victoria has a policy of tearing up this treaty, which has been hammered out after 4 to 5 years of discussion. That is, it's just unimaginable. Now, I'm so disgusted by this that I'm seriously considering standing as a candidate in the Q electorate at the next state election. Because I can't believe that we live in a country and a state where people are happy to support a political party that is willing to tear up a treaty, irrespective of the shortcomings in the treaty. It's a step in the right direction. Now, I'll be thinking about this over the next few weeks, and after Mabo Day, which is on the 3rd of June, I'll be making up my mind whether I will attempt, and the key word is attempt, to stand as a candidate in the Q electorate, which is the electorate of the opposition leader. Because ultimately, when I look at what happened in 1992 with the election of the Kennett government, and when I look at the policies which are being pushed by the Victorian Liberal Party, policies which are based on creating fear, policies which are based on lies, the fact is that we need to stand up to these people, because if we don't stand up to these people, we will get the government we ultimately deserve. Now, I know there's a lot of listeners to the program who think, why bother? The fact is, you bother not because you're going to win, but you bother to highlight there is another way. You bother to highlight there is resistance to policies that only benefit the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, and to stand aside and do nothing is nothing more than becoming a paid-up member of the somebody should do something about that tribe. It's about time that we stopped being members of the something should do, somebody should do something about that tribe, and actually became involved. Now, the Anarchist World this week is not just about ideas. It's about formulating actions. It's about bringing people together. And if we can't stand up to forces in our society which divide us, then we may as well go to bed and not get up. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Well, let's move on. Now, Friday is May Day. Now, obviously, May Day is almost irrelevant in this country. There is a public holiday in Queensland and the Northern Territory, but as far as the rest of the country is concerned, doesn't exist. In Victoria, they march on the first Sunday after the 1st of May, really a sad state of affairs. Now, I want to give a historical background to May Day in this country because it's interlinked with the birth of the Australian anarchist movement. And it's interlinked with resistance to a private investment for private profit mantra. Now, the facts are simple, very simple. And again, as I keep saying, it is the 21st century. Facts don't matter. You just create them. And you know why? How you create them? As I said at the beginning of the program, it's very simple. The unknown. The known cannot be unknown. It can be marginalised, it can be pushed aside, it can be ignored, but it cannot be unknown. But if we are unwilling to embrace our radical past, our radical history, if we are unwilling to join the dots to talk about the country that we have together created, then they will use the unknown to create their own story. They will tell our story for us. And they, people in authority, will try to continue to marginalise and ostracise us. And that's why the history of May Day is important. It may be an insignificant celebration, but it is important. And here at the Anarchist Media Institute, we celebrate May Day on the 1st of May. The history of May Day, both internationally and Australia, is interlinked with the history of the anarchist movement. In 1884, a long time ago, almost 150 years ago, at a conference of the Federated Trades and Labour Unions of the United States and Canada, the conference decided to launch an intensive campaign for an 8-hour day that would create widespread struggles on the 1st of May 1886. So in 1884, the Federated Trades and Labour Council of the United States and Canada decided the 1st of May 1886 would be a day of action to try to ensure that workers worked an 8-hour day. On the 1st of May 1886, demonstrations were held across the United States and Canada. 2 days later, on the 3rd of May 1886, striking workers met outside the McCormack Harvesting Machine Company. Chicago police, a totally corrupt mob, fired on the workers, killing 4 and wounding many others. 2 days later, the Chicago anarchists organised a protest meeting at the Haymarket Square. The next evening, the Chicago anarchists organised a protest meeting to protest at the murder of 4 striking workers and the wounding of many others by Chicago police. Only about 200 people attended the protests. The protest was peaceful. At the end of the protest, the police, the Chicago police, seeing so few participants, charged into the crowd. A bomb was thrown at police lines, killing 1 police officer. The police panicked, firing indiscriminately into the crowd and at each other. 7 police and 4 demonstrators lay dead, and over 100 police and demonstrators were wounded. 8 prominent Chicago anarchists were rounded up and charged with conspiracy to commit murder, although only three, Albert Parsons, August Spies, and Samuel Fielding, had spoken at the rally. All eight, Albert Parsons, August Spies, Samuel Fielding, Michael Swab, Oscar Niebe, George Engel, Adolf Fischer, and Louis Sling were found guilty. Seven were sentenced to death, and one, Oscar Niebel, was sentenced to 15 years imprisonment. August Spies, George Engel, Adolf Fischer, and Albert Parsons were hanged on the 11th of November, 1887. That famous day, the 11th of November, 1887. Remember the 11th of November here in Australia? On the 11th of November, 1854, the Ballarat Reform League, the organisation behind the Eureka Rebellion, was formed. On the 11th of November, 1880, Ned Kelly was hung at the old Melbourne jail, while over 6,000 protesters protested outside the jail the night before. On the 11th of November, 1918, we saw the end of the war to end all wars, World War I, a war fought by workers at either end of a bayonet for the glory of God, King, and country. On the 11th of November, 1975, we saw the dismissal of an elected Labor government headed by Mr. Whitlam. Now, all eight men were obviously victims of widespread hysteria whipped up by the yellow press. That's the Chicago media. It used to be called the yellow press because they used cheap yellow paper to print their lies. I mean, fake news is nothing new. It has been occurring since time immemorial. The only difference between 1886 and 2026 is that fake news now circulates around the world in matters of seconds. You don't even have to print posters. In Australia, that's right, little old Australia, on the 1st of May 1886, David and William Andrade, heeding the call of the Federated Trades and Labour Unions of the United States and Canada, launched the Melbourne Anarchist Club, Australia's first anarchist organisation. 3 years later, on the 14th of July 1889, the International Labour Conference, the Second Internationale, decided to make the 1st of May a great day of international demonstration. There was even an Australian trade union delegate, Mr. John Norton, attended the Second Internationale. The Melbourne Anarchist Club celebrated the 1st of May in 1887, 1888, with a number of public meetings and lectures. May Day was celebrated in the offices of Dr. Maloney, William Maloney, who later became the radical member of the federal seat of Melbourne, 1890 and 1891. Now, the first day May Day celebration occurred in this country on the 1st of May, 1891. And May Day celebrations were held in Barcaldine and Ipswich at the height of the shearer strike. It wasn't till 1892 that the first May Day march was held in Melbourne at the Yarra Bank. Remember the Yarra Bank? Remember this was the site where people would gather on a Sunday and speak? Remember the John Kane government? How they turned the Yarra Bank a historic site for people discussing issues into a tennis centre? Well, we may not remember that, but some of us do. So the first May Day meeting was chaired by the well-known Melbourne anarchist Chummy Fleming, the march, the meeting was preceded with a march which began at the Burke and Wills Monument, which led the men carrying two, which was led by men carrying two huge red flags. In 1893, Chummy Fleming called for a meeting of delegates from across Melbourne to organise future May Day celebrations. Chummy Fleming was involved in every May Day celebration until his death in 1915. His ashes were scattered on the Yarra Bank on May Day the following year. Chummy, C-H-U-M-M-I-E, place in Carlton, next to Argyle Street, still bears his name. So join us at 11 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of May, at Chummy Place in Carlton. That's right. Join us there. And we will hold, I will be doing a walk. That's right. I'll be doing a walk around the Melbourne CBD looking at prominent anarchist sites, mainly 19th century and early 20th century sites, and one 21st century site in Melbourne. So you're all welcome to come along. So join us at midday. Sorry, join us at 11 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of March. So we will see you there this Friday. And if you can't make it, relax. It's all about remembering the day and what it means, especially in an era where we have come to the ridiculous situation where striking is virtually illegal in this country. Striking outside an enterprise bargaining agreement period is an illegal act in this country. Workers can be jailed, but more importantly, fined $10,000 a day, and fines have been imposed on workers in West Australia in the past for being involved in illegal strike activities. When you live in a country where workers are not able to freely associate, where being a member of a trade union is considered to be a criminal offence in many Australians' eyes, where we have forgotten that most of the things we enjoy today were due to workers coming together and fighting for those rights. Because under the Australian Constitution, we only have four rights. We don't have a right of assembly. We don't have a right to freely associate. We don't have a right to freedom of speech apart from during election periods. I mean, people talk about freedom and the democracy. The fact is that under this constitution, Australians have fewer rights than even the English have, and they don't even have a constitution. We have four rights under the Australian constitution: the right to trial by jury for a major crime, the right to be compensated if the federal authorities acquire our property, the right to freedom of religion, although you have to wonder about that right when we hear the rhetoric coming out of Divided Nation regarding certain religious faiths, and the right not to be discriminated against because of the state we live in. Obviously, we live in a federation, and they needed to put that right in to ensure that, New South Wales didn't discriminate against Victoria, and the list goes on and on. Let's move on. What a political loser. Now, I refuse to use his name. I'm not talking about the Washington buffoon. I'm talking about somebody dearer and closer to our hearts. A man who was Dutton's right-hand man. A man who, with Dutton, was responsible for the Liberal Party being reduced to a dysfunctional rump which is pushed around by the Institute of Private Affairs. I hate to use the word public affairs in that regards. By a political party that has been taken over by fossilised Ayn Rand supporters. And here we have this bloke, whose name I shall not utter, getting up and carrying on about four women and nine children. Carrying on about having Palestinian refugees in this country sent back. Carrying on about trade unions. Carrying on about how the Gina Reinhardts of the world are hard done by. Carrying on about the fact that we don't want to tax the corporate sector. No wonder, irrespective of their divisive policies, divided nation is doing so well in the opinion polls. Because the fact is, this is a political party that is about to be flushed down this country's sewerage system. And the reason is, they are bereft of any policies. Did we see this great leader of the current Liberal Party stand up and talk about the welcome to country? No. No. Did we see him stand up and talk about opposition to the Liberal Party's legislation in Queensland, which makes it illegal with punishment of 2 years imprisonment from people to chant globalise the intifada or to chant from the river to the sea? No. Did we see him stand up and talk about the atrocities that are being committed in Gaza, atrocities beyond human comprehension? No. And they expect Australians to take them seriously? I mean, the sooner these people are flushed down the political sewage system, the better off we'll all be. In many regards, the policies that they're pushing make divided nation look good by comparison. Now, obviously, he's a step-in leader. He's not going to be there for the election. Mr. Hastings, or whatever his name is out there waiting to politically execute him at some particular point in time. And maybe we'll have some policies which don't just promote the coal and gas industry, policies which accept there is some type of climate emergency out there. That's not to say that the alternative Liberal Party, masquerading as the Labor Party, is any better. Obviously, they're not as bad as this mob. But the fact is, we are in a period of unparalleled opportunity as far as parliamentary legislation is concerned. We have something which is unheard of in this country. We have a government in power with a record majority which has a sympathetic Senate. So what do we see? What will we see with the budget in a week or two's time? What do we see? A government that sits on its hands. A government that's not willing to do anything. A government which thinks the housing crisis is going to be resolved by giving more money to the private housing sector. A government that has forgotten its history. A Prime Minister who has forgotten that he is Prime Minister, that he was able to climb the social elevator because of public housing, that his mother, a single parent, was able to look after him because of the single parents' benefit. A benefit which single parents, you know, partially lose when their youngest child turns 8. A man who obtained his university education free of charge. Here we have a whole political class that has forgotten where it comes from. And that is the major issue today. History in this country begins when you wake up in the morning. We have no history that we're aware of as a community. We can't even acknowledge 60,000 years of prior occupation. We can't even stomach the idea of a welcome to country. We can't pass legislation which ensures that the one-third of Australians which rely on social security benefits live a reasonable life free of the fear of poverty. We have governments at the state and federal level who are doing everything they can to privatise the public housing sector, thinking the private sector is going to resolve their issue. Now, I'm going to finish off with talking about competition. Now, we all know about the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, but I'm talking about real competition in this country. It doesn't matter how much legislation you put in place, but if you have 2, 3, 4 major corporations dominating any field of human endeavour, you have no competition. Capitalism is about generating profits, and you generate profits in 2 ways. You exploit your staff, or you exploit the consumers. It's very simple. It's a simple concept. Obviously, innovation is involved. But the fact is, you cannot have competition irrespective of the legislation which gives some minimal powers to the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission in a sector where there is no public institutions. The way you engender competition and lower prices in any field, whether it's financial or housing or education, is by having a strong public sector. So if you want housing, you need a strong public housing sector. Not social housing, affordable housing, community housing, which is nothing more than apologists for the private sector. You can't have Social Security being managed by the private sector, irrespective of their for-profit or not-for-profit. So if you want real competition, as we had in the past, when you had a Commonwealth Bank which provided competition to the private banks, we didn't see the plethora of charges which are exposed to today. We didn't see the closure of branches, irrespective, you know, of social media and internet banking. The fact is that ultimately, unless you have a strong public sector in a field of in every field of human endeavour, there is no competition, irrespective of the legislation which is put in place to ensure that competition occurs. So remember, we do live in a society which is basically dominated by the private sector. Every public institution has been privatised. Those that haven't, like public health and public education, are starved of funds. They're not able to provide the services that are necessary. Even with the National Disability and Insurance Scheme, which we're seeing cutbacks in, the fact is, it's very simple. Obviously, we can't afford it. When we see most of the profits which are made from this country's natural resources are funneled back into shareholder profits or profits of owners of companies. The fact is, we find ourselves in this situation as a people because we've forgotten our history. We've forgotten how we have sickness pay, how we have access to public education, how we have access to public housing, how we have had access to public health. We have forgotten the struggles, because every day when we wake up, it's a brand new day. But the fact is, it's a groundhog day. It's the same day in and day out. The private sector continues to dominate every aspect of our existence on planet Earth. You've been listening to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. If you're interested in radical Australian history, I suggest you go to the presentations I've done over the last few years, which you can access on YouTube, josephtoscano.now, josephtoscano.now. If you're interested in putting public interest, that's the interest of the many, before the interests of the few, I suggest you have a look at the YouTube channel, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. If you're interested in joining the struggle to ensure there is a strong public sector, I suggest you join Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. Just go to pibci.net. You can join online. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. Now, those people are on Facebook, and I understand more and more people are leaving Facebook. If you go to the Facebook page, Joseph Toscano, that'll give you access to many of the ideas that many of the activities that the Anarchist Media Institute organises. Now, if you are in Melbourne this Friday, the 1st of May, I encourage you to join us at 11 a.m. That's right, 11 a.m. at Chummy Place in Carlton for the Radical Anarchist May Day walk around major anarchist and radical historical sites in the Melbourne CBD, and then join us for lunch at the Paramount Food Court. Thank you once again for listening to the Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station. This program has been brought to you courtesy of the Community Radio Network. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. I encourage you to join in Reconciliation Week activities at the end of the month, I think between the 26th of May and the 3rd of June. I think it's important that we fight back this new denial of this country's history, both radical trade union history, radical extra-parliamentary history, and the history of the colonisation of this country. Thank you once again for listening to the Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Listen in to your local community radio station next week to hear the Anarchist World This Week. And thank you once again to all those folk at the Community Radio Network that make sure that the Anarchist World This Week is heard across the country.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Wash my hands. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.